From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It's been a bit of a weird weather year so far, and it's only February. What began as a warm, dry winter with a super long, foggy patch across the valley flipped pretty dramatically last week after the coldest storm of the season dumped snow across the Sierra, and even much lower elevations like Napa and Redding reported some dusting. It brought widespread travel disruptions, especially for people caught unaware and reliant on Interstate 80 or Highway 50. And led to one of the largest backcountry disasters in recent history, when an avalanche near Castle Peak claimed the lives of 9 skiers. As people in the foothills dug out from under all of that snow and dealt with lost power and internet due to downed trees and lines, the rain soon began, helping to clear streets and sweeping much of that water to lakes, reservoirs, and rivers further downstream. And this weekend, it's expected to warm up even more, though it seems a bit early for fool's spring. Joining us to explain what all this back and forth means for our snowpack is ABC 10 meteorologist Rob Karlmark. Rob, welcome back to Insight.
All right, it's great to be back. And Vicky, I don't think I'm the only one. I would love just a normal storm.
I know.
I would love a storm where we know exactly what's going to happen, what we know. We've been through it many times, but this year, as you mentioned, with all of those weather items, it's just been all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, you have been doing this for so many years. It seems like, you know, it's still fun and exciting for you. It's not predictable.
You know, what was very strange was you mentioned the fog, and I think we don't ever want to go back to that again. That was the first time for me. And in fact, we had to ask the Weather Service, what is going on here with, you know, has there been anything like this? They had to sort of create their own metric of, you know, days in a row in the 40s without the skies totally clearing. And they came up with something, and it ended up being a record for that kind of weather going back at least 20 years.
Is it considered tule fog? I know that there can be a debate about what tule fog is or is not.
That's a very good question. I would say it most resembles people's memory of what tule fog is, where it's gray, it's cold, the clouds don't budge all day long. But technically, it was a low cloud layer, you know, 500 feet to 1,000 feet. So it wasn't ground level fog. But if you want to call it tule fog, everyone knows what you mean. And that's probably the easiest way to describe what that was.
All right. Well, let's get a start off with a look ahead to the weekend. We're rounding the corner to the weekend. And last weekend, of course, was a big one for people who just love that fresh powder and crowds. But the forecast looking ahead is a little bit different. So if people want to head up to the Sierra, is this weekend a good time to do so?
You know, I would say that this is the time of year when the Sierra starts becoming less and less crowded, and there's actually a lot more opportunities to enjoy the snow without some of the problems that come with it. You mentioned last weekend. Last weekend was easily the most busy and crowded. Parking was at a premium, if there was anything at all. The roads were still very busy. The resorts had 30-minute lift lines. It was just a lot all at once. The reason why? It was the best snow of the year. But guess what? This weekend, you're going to have sunny skies. It's not going to be that cold. Kids like to ski and snowboard when it's warm, not necessarily when it's cold. Also, if you're a beginner, it's going to be a lot easier to get in and out. So I would say this weekend is an opportunity. It's not going to be blower powder, which is what everybody loves and what all the, you know, all the marketing videos all about, but it is accessible, it's easier, and you're going to be able to have a good time.
And people might not think of this. I mean, I've been guilty of this in the past. It only takes one time to not do that again, is to wear sunscreen when you're up in the snow.
Yeah, this is the time of year when you don't need to ask if somebody's been spending the weekend in Tahoe. You'll see it on their face. The goggle tan is coming back, and it's going to start this weekend.
So what should people remember if they're going to head up to the Sierra? Maybe they're not used to driving or just even being in the snow. I mean, we had so many stories last week of people leaving the highways when they closed, taking GPS instructions that led them to even worse conditions. We had Caltrans on about that during that storm. What do you want people to keep in mind if they're going to be heading up to those higher elevations?
I would still say, stick to the main roads. They might be busy, but the side roads, one well-known one that gets everybody stuck all the time is Mormon Immigrant Trail. There is no secret shortcut between 50 and 88, and it's still snow-packed. In fact, it's closed. It's closed because they have a lot of PG&E equipment and helicopters bringing new poles and new lines into the backcountry for some of these areas that were heavily, heavily impacted by all the heavy snow and the low snow as well. So I would just say stick to the main roads, go where you need to go, and I wouldn't venture off in some uncharted territory, because it's still, even with the sunny weather, it's still not the time for that.
Yeah, and for people who want to head up to have fun, of course, there are thousands of people who live up in the Sierra foothills, many of whom suffered from power outages, not having internet. I mean, looking at the PG&E updates throughout the week, I mean, it was thousands upon thousands of customers without power. So if you drive along Highway 50 east up to the Sierra, I mean, it's not hard to notice all of the downed trees piling up, reappearing from under the snow along the roadway. And in some places like Pollock Pines, they were hit pretty hard. They took down power lines, poles, a few cars, even some roofs. Why was last week's storm so destructive?
You know, there's a classic way in if you've been doing weather like I have for a while, you have to understand what is the weather relative to what people are used to. For example, if you said, hey, Truckee's going to have an inch of snow this weekend, that's seen as a big disappointment. If you said Sacramento's going to have an inch of snow, all of a sudden it's a big deal. The amount of snow that we saw for the lower foothills in places like Arnold, in places like Pollock Pines, in places like Grass Valley and Nevada City was just way more than normal. And as you're driving through the higher elevations, you'll notice the forest change as you start to go up. And they're sort of in this in between. They've got some pine trees which can handle the heavy snow, but a lot of trees that just can't. They break easily. There was a lot of wind. You get down limbs, you get down trees, they fall, whatever's beneath it, whether it's a road, whether it's a car, whether it's a home or power line, there's just a lot more at risk in these areas, and you see the aftermath. So unfortunately, this very much resembles what happened a couple of years ago, where a lot of people were stuck in their homes for a week or more because they couldn't plow the driveway. A lot of folks in these areas are retired. They don't have the access to some of the resources that other people are. And the other thing too, is that there's a very formalized way of removing snow in South Lake Tahoe or Truckee or some of these places. They've got city plows, they've got county plows, they've got Caltrans. You throw in a foot of snow in Arnold, who's moving that? Where does it go? When's the last time this happened? It's private roads, it's private driveways. It becomes very much a in the situation moment, and not everybody has it hammered out as efficiently as the higher elevation. So my heart goes out to them. I know they're still suffering right now.
Yeah, it may come as a surprise to people, but the quality of snow can vary depending on the system and depending on the temperature as well. Can you expand upon that?
Yeah, the snow quality very much depends on how cold it is. The colder the air, which is what we saw with that last big storm, there tends to be bigger snowflakes. There's more air in those snowflakes, so you get this really light, dry, fluffy snow. It resembles what you get in Colorado or Utah. That's why some of those places are famous for the snow quality, because it's colder there. But they don't really get as much. What we get is this heavier, wet Sierra cement, which is the nickname for it, often. But with this last storm, it wasn't. It was very dry, but it actually didn't have that much water in it. One of the things that we tend to track during the winter is snowpack. That's our water in the long, hot summer. And the numbers didn't come up that much because it was great for skiing and snowboarding, light, dry, fluffy hero snow, great for photos, but it was actually not containing that much water. So the numbers came up, but not as much as you would think.
Where do you think those numbers, that percentage stands right now for the Sierra snowpack of its historical average for this time of year?
You know, it's going to be below average for all sections of the Sierra. They break it up to northern, central, and southern. And the southern Sierra was the only spot after this recent storm that was actually above average. It was 101%. We'll take it. But after this recent storm, which was rain on snow, all of the numbers are actually down. So we're considerably less where we want to be. The big number that the water resource people tend to look at is the April 1st average. In other words, at the end of the ball game, by about April, the big cold storms stop. Where are we for that? We're definitely less than 2/3 of the snowpack where we want to be. It's roughly between 50 and 60%.
Given that it's going to be warm today, I mean, the temperatures, they're ticking back up. Is that a cause of concern for maybe localized flooding in some areas, given that snow over the last week?
Yeah, you get this combination where everything that came in with the last storm was rain, not snow. So that's instant runoff. It goes to the creeks, the streams, they rise first. Then the bigger rivers tend to come up, and also some of the reservoirs. So when you have that warm spell of rain itself, that's issue number one. In fact, they're spilling from Oroville again because they're trying to keep it at a certain level to absorb a bigger storm in the future. Then you also get a lot of snow melt. So local creeks and streams in the foothills, they're going to be running high for a while, including what's downstream, which is the Sacramento River. Still some spots in the Sacramento River running very high at the moment. So yeah, it's a pause for concern, but I never count out March. People that have lived here for a while, some marches have been absolutely huge. Miracle March comes to mind. It was a 6-year drought that ended in 1 month because of a very long sustained wet and cold pattern that lasted literally the whole month. I don't see that happening for early March, but it certainly can flip back over like we saw recently.
When we had the Central Sierra Laboratory on our show, Andrew Schwartz had mentioned something, you know, that the storm that was making its way across the Sierra in February, that there have been similar ones like it over recent years, you know, after a dry January. I mean, there wasn't really an explanation as to why, but have you seen this kind of pattern emerge in recent years?
So one of the things that we are observing, and this is, you know, I'm a meteorologist, I'm day-to-day weather, but I also am in the climate world as well. And what we've seen worldwide is the jet stream. That's the river of air above our heads that's very fast, that tends to move these systems. What's happening is that it's slowing down. And what happens with that is you get patterns that are stuck. For example, you'll get a long lasting, instead of a couple days of a warm spell, you might get a week or 2 weeks of warm, dry weather. Immediately on the other side, you get the other pattern. You know what happened with the East Coast this year? They've been stuck persistently in a cold and wet pattern. And it's just lasting longer than they typically would in the past. So it's almost like a river. When the river slows down, you tend to see big bends in the river. And what you get is what you get. When it speeds up, it rapidly changes. And you're only dealing with the pattern for a couple of days. So long stuck patterns is something we tend to see not only in the winter, but in the summer as well.
Of course, last week was that terrible tragedy with the deadly avalanche in the Castle Peak area. Do avalanche conditions still exist if people want to hit the backcountry this weekend?
What I would say, the recent rain has stabilized a lot of the snow that recently fell. It'll absorb the water. You get this freeze-thaw cycle. So that's what's going to be happening at the top of the snow layers. But what they will all tell you, the people that work for the Sierra Avalanche Center and people that venture out in the backcountry, one of the main culprits is that January cycle where it was really warm and dry for a while, that creates a surface on top of the snow that's what they call faceted, and it's a weak layer. So anything on top of it is going to be able to move once it's disturbed. Now, it's more stable than in the middle of that big storm, but they call it a persistent weak layer. That still exists. So it just depends on the situation. It depends on warming conditions. We can have wet avalanches, which is a concern in the backcountry. As things get heavy and wet, they get slick at some of the deeper layers, and they may be on the move. So I would say there still is an avalanche threat in the backcountry for sure, but it's not the same kind as what we saw with that cold, big storm.
Okay. Well, finally, Rob, you mentioned that even though the storm was powerful, we're still below average, the historical average across the Sierra in terms of snowpack. When you take a look at the long range forecast, do you see any significant weather patterns that could boost our snowpack?
Unfortunately, like I was talking about with stuck patterns, I know with a pretty high certainty that this next pattern that we're moving into, because we're hitting the 70s, today's probably going to be the warmest day of the year so far, by the way. We're probably going to be stuck here for at least the next week, maybe 2 weeks in a row. So there's no telling past that. It certainly could flip back. I would say one thing, if anyone's concerned about water, we've got one ace in our back pocket, and that is our reservoirs. They've consistently been above average, storing more water than they normally do this entire season. This last storm was not great for snow, but it's still water, and the reservoirs are in good shape. The only thing that they have to manage going forward is they want to keep it as high as possible, but they still need a buffer because we still have the potential, at least through the end of March, for a big storm, and they need room in those reservoirs to absorb it because they're still in flood protection mode right now. That's how most of the big reservoirs got built. So they're still holding on to that. But at least we can tell you, for water in the reservoirs, we're in good shape there.
Today's going to be the hottest day of the year. I mean, 70s, I mean, it feels good, but is that good for February?
I mean, it's better now than it was in early February when we hit the 70s for a couple days on the 6th and on the 8th. So I'd rather have it happen now than earlier. But again, you know, we still have time. I never turn my back on March. It tends to usually have a big surprise or two in there. So we'll wait and see how the rest of the season pans out.
Rob, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And that is Rob Karlmark, who is a meteorologist at ABC 10. Up next, this week marks 4 years since the start of the war in Ukraine following Russia's invasion. We'll check in with the local Ukrainian community about how they're weathering and reflecting on the ongoing conflict. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.